All right, with that introduction, of course, I'm hungry already for Original Joe's. Well, you know, two guys talking ball. By the way, Original Joe's open for outdoor seating in North Beach. Give them a call. Of course, there'll be a special Father's Day menu coming up a week from tomorrow. But Monday through Thursday, 3 to 9. Friday, noon to 9. Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9, with brunch offered from 10 a.m. to 1. Call 415-775-4877. And John Dugan, the most unique restaurateur in the Bay Area, getting it together out at Westlake and, of course, in North Beach with Original Joe's. Bruce, how are you? How are you doing?
Doing well. Missing those trips to Westlake Joe's before the movies, you know. It was a real regular thing for us, but we're doing well. We're healthy, and we feel lucky to be, you know, my wife and I are still making some money, and I'm real busy with the Chronicle, so, you know, no complaints out here.
Very good, very good. Well, the Players Association, they have formally rejected the owner's last offer. And the ball is now back in Rob Manfred's court. And I said this earlier in the show when I started, Bruce. People shouldn't get the idea that Rob Manfred is some independent commissioner. He is a hired mouthpiece for the owners. They picked him. And he gives the owner's perspective. He is not here to give the player's perspective. And people have to understand that. So now, whatever comes out of his mouth now or whatever the next offer is, they say, Rob Manfred, what are you going to do? It's owners. What are you going to do? Rob, would you please tell us what they want to do?
And he takes all the heat. It's always been that way. I mean, back in 94 when they called off the World Series, that was entirely on the owners, and the people blamed it on Selig. But, you know, the owners were guiding him in that direction, and there wasn't much he can do. He's at their beck and call, more or less. And I know it crushed Bud, because unlike Rob Manfred, who's a labor guy, you know, Bud is a baseball guy. And when he ran the Brewers, you know, we had great connections with him. He'd come through the press box and trade stories and throw a little witty remarks out at all the Brewers beat writers, and just a whole different deal than a kind of a stuffed shirt labor guy, but like Manfred. But I do feel sorry for him in the fact that everybody's blaming him. Well, how could you come up with that counter proposal, you know? And it's not really the case.
No, and everyone says, it's interesting because I listen to Mad Dog and all the different shows during the week when I can. But one of the issues, they said, well, what will Manfred's spot in history be? Is he concerned about that? He has no choice. He has no choice. They're going to tell him what to do.
It'll be dictated by what the owners do. That's right. I mean, to date, there's nothing, you know, he has really nothing to put on that plaque for himself in terms of a legacy. I mean, you know, the game has lost a lot of its appeal, I think, for various reasons, and he always hasn't always said the right thing. Maybe didn't act decisively enough with the Astros, this and that. It's almost always criticism coming his way. I will say there's a lot to be said for an even temperament. He doesn't start shouting at people, you know, in the middle of a press conference. And I think because he knows deep down he's not making these calls, you know, and he's just delivering the message. He's like the White House press secretary.
Yeah, he's like General William Eckert. who was the commissioner after Fort Frick, the unknown soldier, they called him. But he was a commissioner. And obviously, it was so obvious in the 60s that the commissioner was chosen by the owners. And that's Happy Chandler, Fort Frick. That's the way it's been. They made the mistake with Judge Landis. They gave him authority. And once he died in November of 1944, they said, never again will we give anyone that kind of authority. And they haven't since. And that's the truth.
Next thing you know, you got Bowie Kuhn in a short sleeve golf shirt when it's 30 degrees and blizzard.
Really? And he never could read the room. Isn't that amazing?
Exactly.
Never.
Yeah.
He never could read the room. Well, we'll see. Yeah. I say it every Saturday. Well, we'll know by next Saturday. But I get, and you mentioned this in your column today, a little different perspective for the A's. They can't wait to get going. They got a chance to win something, truthfully. And for the Giants, it's more development, really.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the A's, I mean, you know, there's some talk about, there's always financial issues with the A's. Are they really going to be able to keep Matt Chapman and Matt Olson? You know, is Semien really going to go? And it's always in the air, and more often than not, they do. But right now, as we speak, they've got a team that can beat Houston. They've got a team that has beaten Houston in at various times over the last couple of years in the season series, sometimes very decisively and convincingly. And they've got great young pitching, Luzardo and Puck and Manaea and Laureano, really good players. You can't really find a weakness on that team, I don't think. I mean, not a really glaring one. They're absolutely ready to win right now, and who knows, this might be their best shot at it. So they're dying with this news that they can't get on the field. It's just so terrible, and the Howard Terminal project is dying along with their chance to prove themselves on the field. They probably will play baseball. I don't know about Howard Terminal, but you know, with the Giants, I was just trying to project. You know, fans are, they know that there's some really likable guys on this team, and I think they're going to be fun to watch, at least for a while before it becomes evident that, you know, they don't have the talent some of these other teams do. But they've got a lot of young guys that are going to be prominent in 2 or 3 years. You know, the Joey Bart and Ramos and, you know, maybe Hunter Bishop's going to be in there. The Bailey, the catcher they drafted at North Carolina State's a great defensive catcher for sure. If he hits, it's going to be great. And the shortstop prospect, Luciano, I mean, you can, you know, Dubon. I mean, they've got guys that you can see on the field for a contending team if they can build the pitching around it and get some power. Admittedly, two big demands, but you know, these things can happen. So there's a real contrast between the two teams, which is not uncommon over the years. There generally is.
No, and it sort of looked that way in the draft as well. The Giants drafting some very safe players, so to speak. Patrick Bailey, I never heard the phrase, you know, I heard this for the first time this week. You can never have too much catching. I never heard that before. You can never have too many runs. You can't have too much
Hank
pitching.
Hank Foyles and Dutch Dotterer. You know, I mean, you can never
really
have too much catching.
So who is this Patrick Bailey? Is Patrick Bailey Mark Hill? Is that who he is? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. I like that he was, as I mentioned in the column, he was. They let him call his own game, which is very rare in the collegiate game. But it just makes so much sense. I mean, a guy knows his pitchers as well as anybody if he's really sharp like Bailey is. He's a tremendous defensive catcher. There's across the board, he's a big league defensive catcher. But he has hit. You know, whether the big leagues are going to expose his bat, that remains to be seen. But you see the clips. The swing looks good. Mark Hill never looked good at the plate, just ever.
He had a good nickname.
Yeah. What was it?
Boot.
Boot. Yeah. Yeah.
Boot Hill.
Boot Hill. We're on Boot Hill when he's up there.
That's right. Mark Boot Hill. That was it.
Yeah.
My goodness.
A lot of teams were after Bailey, so I think there's some hope for him. And, you know, maybe he catches, Posey at third and Bart's at first, or one of them's DHing, and you can just, you know, use your imagination a little bit as they stockpile. But, you know, if it turns out that Bart and Bailey are only catchers, then that's not a great situation. But I think they're looking for versatility.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Manfred does here, delivering the message from the owners and how many games. Because, look, if it's 50 games or 48 games, heck, the Giants could win. Anything can happen. I mean, at the hook of the 48 games is that it's open for everybody. I don't care who you are. You know, you get, and plus, if you have 8 teams in the playoffs, you know, you have half the league in the playoffs, it could be crazy. But no one, and I'll predict this, will make more moves, whether it's with 30 players, 28 players, 26 players, whatever they're proposing as the month goes on, than Farhan. He'll have people, he'll have Uber going in and out of that ballpark. It'll look like the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, and you know, why not? I mean, we saw a taste of the way he operates last season, and Lord knows there are a lot of guys you wish had never come in. But meanwhile, you get a Dickerson or a Mike Yastrzemski and that sort of thing. He made a nice deal for Pilar, and certainly had a decent track record. And I'm really interested. Henry Shulman mentioned it today in the paper that you know, it's free agent season now for the $20,000 crowd. You know, the guys who weren't drafted, they can only sign for $20,000, and Lord knows any team can afford that. So I hope they're very proactive there. I mean, you know, there's some players out there that are probably going to be stars. I mean, every year in the draft, there's guys taken sixth round and lower who wind up being great players, Hall of Famers in some case. So they're going to be on that. You know, the bummer being is that they haven't seen anyone, you know, play high school or college ball in so long. It's you don't have that right up to the minute information, but it'll be a little hit and miss. But this is really going to be a test of his know-how, and we'll see how Gabe Kapler's input works into it too.
Yeah, I'd say if you're any good, even though you weren't drafted, I mean, if you think you're good and you should have been drafted in this, you're not going to sign for $20,000. You're going to go to junior college. You're going to do something. And my personal take is that the people who will be picked will be sort of 10th rounders or higher. Because otherwise, why would you give up your potential bonus for 6 months at $20,000 if you think you could go to a junior college or a college and raise your stock?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go to a major school, if you go to, you know, Vanderbilt or UCLA or wherever and get into the College World Series and look good, you're talking about millions instead of $20,000. So, yeah, that's the college game is going to be overloaded with talent, in some cases like too much and, you know, tough calls and guys promise this and they're not going to be able to play and all this stuff. And, geez, I went there and I couldn't get a job, or I had a job and I lost it to this new guy. That's just sports, you know. But the college game's going to be pretty good, assuming that they play a college season. I mean, we got to see how college football works, because if that completely bombs out and college football just can't be played, you're talking about schools in some cases losing like 75% of their athletic revenue, and then who takes the hit? You know, the spring sports, and that's baseball doesn't bring in any money. So it's just, then you'll have a situation like when Cal dropped baseball, and you're going to have, you know, a bunch of donors stepping up, and can they save the program? It's just heartbreaking stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. There's a good story about Darren Baker, Dusty's kid. He's not going to take a $20,000 flyer, but he's going back, and he started a GoFundMe kind of thing as well.
Yeah, I tell you, I'd love to see the Giants or the A's draft him, because he's like Dusty in that I know the kid pretty well. I've known him since right from the start. He and my daughter Molly are virtually the same age.
Okay.
And Darren Baker is one of the great kids I've ever come across. Prejudice aside, he just is. He's just a fantastic, caring, adult like kid with great perspective. He's a really good athlete. He moves around second base like a major leaguer. There's no question about that. He's been a light hitter, and his body's been very, very slight. But he's putting on some muscle, and he's working at that. And I just think, I certainly think he's worth drafting. Who knows if he's going to be a big league hitter like his dad, who was like Dr. Scald, you know, dead-pulling Nolan Ryan. Just the character and the defense alone make him worthwhile as a draft pick after he plays another year at Cal.
Very good. Well, that'd be fun to see him. And he did well in the Cape Cod League in a very short period.
That was good. That's a good league, a good test, yeah.
Hey, this is an anniversary, yesterday was, of the Tigers firing manager Les Moss. And who did they hire? Sparky Anderson. Les Moss, you want to talk about backup catchers. Les Moss was the classic backup catcher of the 50s. I won't even start with the St. Louis Browns, White Sox, and other teams, Les Moss. But Sparky gets hired with the Tigers, and, of course, 84 is an amazing season. Hall of Famer. I was thinking about this. You must have covered Sparky, right, Bruce?
No, absolutely. The mid-80s, I covered the A's mostly, and we made many, many trips into Tiger Stadium. And I'll tell you, there's nothing like sitting in the manager's office after the game or on the bench before the game and listening to somebody like Sparky or Earl Weaver or Bobby Cox. You know, those guys are going away. Boshi, you know, those guys are it looks like they're going away. And there's so much experience, you know, so much character and humor. He, and in 84, We went into Detroit a couple times during that season, and then I covered the World Series, the 84 World Series, and I was there, you know, when it ended. So, yeah, lots of experience with Sparky Anderson. And Sparky Anderson is a typical manager, especially in those days, of a guy who played in the big leagues, but just he was like a light-hitting second baseman, right? That's the, like Tony La Russa. He was exactly that guy, but he played 1 year in the bigs, Marty, and he was a starting second baseman for the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
He was a starting second baseman the whole season.
Yes.
And I have to ask you, who was the second baseman in 58? Solly Hemus.
Okay.
One of our favorites.
I'm trying to think who Sparky got traded for as you were speaking, because he was a Dodger, and he got traded to the Phillies, and I'd have to look it up to see who Sparky was. But it's one of those names you'll recognize. But Sparky.
Yeah, he came up with the Dodgers, which was a dream for him, because he went to Dorsey High School. He and the great Art Spander, Dorsey High School grads of that era, all-city player, played with the Montreal Royals in the Dodgers organization, and was a heck of a player. And just when the Dodgers are moving west and he's going to try to play for his dream team in 59, he gets traded to the Phillies, and it kind of went downhill after that. But, wonderful man. Really enjoyed spending some time around him and, you know, getting to know him a little bit as somebody who drops into his office a dozen times over the years.
There, you're lucky. So lucky to be able to. I'm telling you, when the book comes out, it's going to be a hell of a book. It really will. It will. You've got so many experiences. All right. December 23rd, 1958. Traded by the Dodgers to the Phillies for Jim Golden, Rip Rapolsky, and Gene Snyder. And I can tell you something about each one, but I won't. But Rip Rapolsky, I think he was from the Valley.
I remember him being a young Dodger fan. He was kind of,
right?
He didn't pan out.
No.
Great name. Well, you wanted him to just rip one out of there, didn't you? But no.
Eldon Rip Rapolsky, and Phillies, Cardinals, and ended up as a Dodger. Jim Golden was one of their phenoms and never made it. And Gene Snyder was another one, pitcher that never made it. All right, so that's that. I love this part of the show. We got to talk about, with Rod Wotus and Bill Lasky tonight, Ron Peronoski as the pitching coach of the Giants. And I don't know if you got to know Peronoski, Bruce, but, boy, you talk about a long career with the Dodgers, and they just canned him and just said, well, sorry, you're not going to be our pitching coach anymore. This is like after 20 years almost, and they brought in Dave Wallace because he was younger. And Peronoski ended up with the Giants. How about that?
Yeah, he joined him in 95. He seems like their minor league pitching coordinator. Then he was Dusty Baker's bench coach, I think, before he became the pitching coach. But it did seem strange, guarantee you, for people like me especially. I mean, in 63, this guy out of the bullpen for the Dodgers, and, you know, they're winning the whole thing that year, goes 16-3. And he was like a hero. My buddy and I used to go out there all the time in that season, and Dodger Stadium was a heck of a place to try to get out of after a game. You just hated to be one of those people who left early like everybody else in Hollywood. You know, they're on a date, and they don't want to be stuck in traffic with their girlfriends or whatever. But this is a buddy of mine. He was an athlete, too. And we decided that we would see the game and beat the traffic. So Peronoski would come in, sure enough, relieving Drysdale or Koufax, and we'd get right down by the exit to the stadium, knowing that he was going to retire the side and end the game. And as soon as that last out was like in the air, before it was even caught, we were in a dead sprint to our cars, laughing all the way home.
I love it.
So he was a hero of ours.
Yeah, well, Ron and Bill, they had great stories of Ron Peronoski. So if you missed that part of the show tonight, check it out. It's everything's archived at KMBR.com on our podcast page. ESPN's doing something on McGuire and Sosa, the 1998 home run race that many people say saved baseball and sort of launched everyone into the steroid era. But when we look back on it, was it a fraud? Was it necessary? Was it fun? Who cares?
I think it was fun. I think it was kind of necessary. I don't think it saved the game. I don't think you can kill the game or save it. You know, I mean, I've never thought that, and that's going to be the case whenever the game comes back. With fans, we're going to realize that even if they don't play this season, the game's still going to have the sort of appeal that only baseball can have. But, you know, to the thing about it is that it really was wonderful. You know, Sosa was a real, you know, live wire presence. You know, you couldn't take your eyes off him. He was kind of a funny guy. He brought a lot of McGuire's personality out of him. So the interchanges that they had, you know, during all this thing were really good. And they're hitting these bombs, and you know, records are being broken, and it was fun. I mean, you know, people were in tears. You know, writers, you know, some of the things that happened, they were so moved. You know, and you can't say that didn't happen. Everybody is saying, "Well, that's a fraud. Forget him," and never. And of course, it happened. It really bugs me that Sosa gets like one Hall of Fame vote from me. You know, and the guy hit 60 homers. You know, routinely he hit 600. He didn't not hit him. He did hit him, and so did McGuire. It was, those are the times. The whole history of the game is filled with, you know, what if? What if Babe Ruth had faced black players, or, you know, what if gamblers hadn't ruled the early 20th century? Just the whole history of the game is like this, and, you know, it's not great. It's not great that Bonds, you know, hit 73 homers or any of that's not great, but it did happen, and people were cheering. So what, now you're not cheering? I just don't get it.
Yeah, it was amazing to just go through that and see it happening. And at that point, no one was really skeptical. So it was.
Well, they were. See, that's another thing. It was obvious to you know, people in the game, you know, that was happening. That was what, 98?
Yeah, 1998.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Tom Boswell writing many years before, writing about Jose Canseco. It looked like an obvious performance-enhancing drug guy, and there was always talk behind the scenes about this stuff. It was not a mystery whatsoever, not the way that it got to be, you know, years later. But
no, it wasn't reported like that in '98.
No.
I mean, the big thing was they looked in his locker and saw some, you know, powder supplement. That was the big deal for McGuire.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve Wilstein, I think, was the guy.
Yeah, that was the big deal, and he was vilified for reporting what he saw. How about that?
yeah, exactly. No, it certainly wasn't popular because, you know, people didn't want to rock the boat of this great thing that was happening, and the home runs were leaving the yard, but I mean, it certainly wasn't a huge puzzle that Sammy Sosa suddenly looked a hell of a lot bigger than he ever had, and all these things. But, you know,
well, but it was an exciting part of baseball, and it does capture everyone for 6 months or 8 months, whatever it was. I like Jason Stark's little tete-a-tete with McGuire, where he said to McGuire, "Could you still? Do you think without PEDs you would have hit 70 home runs?" McGuire says, "Absolutely." Absolutely. When I got in the box, I was focused, and I could hit home runs. So,
well, he broke in with 49.
That's exactly what I said. That's exactly what I said. But as,
with the A's, yeah.
The answer was 49, 870. Okay.
No.
It's still pretty good for him.
Exactly. Yeah. He could have. He absolutely could have. I mean, the guy had unbelievable power.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think
it
did. All right, last one. It is the anniversary of the first interleague game, which we still have going strong. People seem to like it. Baseball likes it, as you point out in your column. Probably going to have a universal DH, which I think is unfortunate, but it's coming. But first interleague game, God, who would we have thought back then that we'd still be talking about 25 years later, or close to it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think they brought it in as a novelty. I mean, I didn't like it just coming from the times when the World Series rolled around and you got two teams that hadn't seen each other since maybe spring training, if that. You know, I thought that you lose a lot of things there. I mean, now you go through September and you're playing teams in a division, and all of a sudden the Giants are playing Detroit on September 20th. You know, that stuff is wrong. When it first happened, at that time, you know, I'd been to every park in both leagues, and I was just thinking, God, Yankees, Mets, and White Sox, Cubs, this is going to be great. And it was, it's to some extent. But then over the years, that wears off a little bit, and you're talking more about, you know, Twins, Pirates, and neither one of them's going anywhere. And sometimes it's like, this, I wonder if this game even counts. It does, yeah. But you wonder, it doesn't feel like it did. And I wasn't that wowed by the A's Giants thing for a lot of the years. Just didn't seem to have that much energy to it. But, you know, we're we're stuck with it right now. What the game needs right now, I think it needs to expand to 32 teams. To me, Montreal is sitting there as a great option. You got many other options to fill it out, and once you do that, and you get all the divisions are, you know, even instead of every night right now with 30 teams, you got 15 games, and one of them has to be interleague. It has to be. Get rid of that. That's the first thing you get rid of. I think expansion would be good for the game, and it could even do away with interleague play. I don't know if they would actually do that, but I'd love to see it.
Well, I think we're getting into the geographical issues, and maybe who knows from this pandemic with traveling, and who knows what the world is going to look like in 2 years, honestly. And
no
baseball's going to have to adjust to it. So we may be heading towards that. Just what you said.
Yes.
Geographically. Well, great to talk with you. I liked your column today about the
Thank
catchers.
You.
Left-handed hitting catchers like Tyler Soderstrom.
Oh, yeah, huh?
You listed Smokey Burgess. Well, thank you. Dalton, Tim McCarver, or Mike Socha, not to mention Mickey Cochran and Bill Dickey and the incomparable Yogi Berra. So I said to myself, all right, who else?
Who else is the question?
John Roseboro? How about him?
Yeah, he's in there.
Tom Hallett.
Having seen the Dodgers all those years, he was okay, but he was not a huge threat at the plate. He just wasn't. He
Tom
wasn't
Haller?
Like the guys were
talking. Tom Haller.
Tom Haller had some decent years with the Giants, a little bit of power. I think on those teams, after you get through with Mays, McCovey, and Cepeda, and all those guys, Haller didn't look like much. But yeah, those are a couple of good guys. But the interesting thing to me is that there hasn't been anyone in quite some time of any note.
Yeah, I love when you do those lists, though. It really you cover a lot of ground. Let's put it that way.
I figured you'd like some of those names, but those are great names, and the history of the game is always something you want to bring in when something unusual happens, like a switch hitting catcher, like Bailey.
Yeah,
you're going back to Ted Simmons and Victor Martinez and guys like that. So
they were badass players, as you point out. They were very good. Hey, Bruce, take care. Great to talk with you as always. And as I say, by next Saturday we'll know something. I guarantee it.
I'll tell you what, next Saturday is going to be a big day because we're going to be talking about what happens the following Saturday in the negotiations.
Oh, goodness. All right. Have a great night. Thanks, Bruce.
You too, Marty. Take care.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. Wow. That is baseball talk at its finest. More coming up. KNBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.